Hello, and welcome to the Ipse Podcast. We hope you are enjoying the series. We wanted to give you a quick disclaimer that this episode has been previously recorded. Please feel free to check out our website, mobile app, S1Net page, and other social media channels for more information on Ipse. As we gear up for the Release 3 Go Live in December 2021, we are proud to have you in the fight with us. Enjoy the episode.
Ipse leads the way.
Ipse.
One system, personnel, and pay.
Ipse.
21st century.
Ipse.
Total force visibility. Online.
Online.
Mobile.
Welcome to another episode of the Ipse Podcast, where we talk really hard questions about Ipse. I'm Colonel Greg Johnson, your functional lead of the program. And tonight I'm joined by four individuals, not one or two or three, but four individuals to really get after an interesting topic. It was really originally about data horror stories, you know, and have the spooky music come in. But it was meant to be about data and what we're doing to solve data correctness problems in the Army. But what's kind of transpired over the last couple of months and weeks is the program talking to MCOM representatives and folks in key jobs in our camps, posts, and stations that are servicing soldiers, and really what the challenges of that job is and how it relates to data. So that might not sound that exciting up front, but let me tell you, it's going to be exciting tonight as we welcome several guests. Lieutenant Colonel Joel Gleason is one of those MCOM commanders out there in Okinawa. He's with us tonight. And then all the way from, you know, the West Coast, even though she's coming to the East Coast, Lieutenant Colonel Erica Miller, who once upon a time was on the IPSE program, she's joining her battle buddy, you know, partner in crime, Major Lee Backlars, tonight to talk a little bit about these horror stories and what we're doing about data. And then, you know, last but certainly not the least, Major Tony Wheelbacher, who's really our central focus lead for HR transformation and how we're bringing change to organizations like MCOM and HRC and solving some of the data problems we have in the Army. So I'm really excited that all these folks are here. Let's go around the horn, and you guys can introduce yourselves a little more, give us a little background on you, and then we'll get into some, I guess, horror stories that we want to talk about. So, Tony, why don't you kick it off?
Yes, sir. Thanks. Appreciate that introduction. As introduced, Major Tony Wheelbacher, FMD's HR Transformation Team. I am a finance officer by trade, but since I've been on the program, have had the real excitement of working for the HR transformation team and really ushering and moving along HR transformation efforts. You know, as the name of the branch implies, our task is really to transform HR organizations to be prepared for the IPSE environment. And that's, you know, quite a few things. And, you know, really where we nest with our sister training and deployment team is where the training team, for example, is focused on creating products and manuals and guides that really kind of focus in the system. HR transformation really takes the organizational view. So we look at things like, what are roles and responsibilities for organizations in the IPSE environment, particularly the major ones that have a primary role in business processes, right? HRC, TRADOC, and then you have with us today also MCOM. So we do quite a bit of the planning efforts, talking about, again, what is the concept of support for areas such as customer relationship management or CRM, audit internal controls or IC, and military pay error resolution. These are slightly nuanced processes that the IPSE environment presents. So it's very important that we articulate, you know, at echelon, what are the roles and responsibilities, and then across all components. So we take a look at the concept of support. We also take a look at what I think I'll be talking about today, or what are the end-to-end, the larger end-to-end processes that will exist in the IPSE environment, because IPSE is really a system of systems. So there will be, you know, it'll be nested amongst the myriad of HR systems that will still have a role in the IPSA environment. So our task is to really kind of lay that out end to end, by process, by business process, to include, you know, what is the HR professional expected to do in IPSA? What are they expected to do in another authoritative data system that's still up, or what are they expected to do, you know, manually outside of the system? So a lot of work with the Army commands, the ASCCs, and the DRUs in helping to shape the HR transformation effort. So glad to be here.
Lots of work there, Tony. And is somehow there's data associated with like everything you just talked about. So how data's flowing, how these business processes work, how data's flowing, why does data matter? And then how do you keep everything working? We're going to talk a lot about that. That's right. Data, hey, Lee and Wonder Twin, Erica Miller, you know, data is king or queen. That's for sure. So, Lee, why don't you introduce yourself?
No, thanks, sir. And it's tough to follow the voice of IPSA from that introduction. But Major Lee Backlars, been on IPSA since the summer of 2018 and really joined my partner in crime, Lieutenant Colonel Miller, in January as we were pushing into the limited user test for release 2 with the Army National Guard in Pennsylvania. And then worked alongside her to deploy the system to all 54 states and territories, and then I took over the role as the functional lead for sustainment of the system for the better part of about 18 months after that. And then recently transitioned to the Release 3 team where I'm supporting the team doing tests. So we just came out of our developer integration test, which is kind of our first stage to really take a look at some of the data sloshing, as I call it, between inbound interfaces and then executing a business process in IPSA, and then watching that go out on outbound interfaces and seeing that interaction. And in some cases, that loops all the way back through to continue the cycle. And so we'll go through a couple more phases of tests and then deploy the system in December 21. And so I think I've gotten a couple tasks, I think, from Colonel Johnson today just on that. And usually I get a phone call with some more things that need to get done. So that's kind of my story and my introduction. Glad to be here.
All right. And you're the wonder twin of the East, in air quotes, Lee. Of course, you know, we're going to introduce Erica here and then give her the floor. But Erica is the wonder twin of the West. Obviously, you guys got that moniker because you were really a dynamic force up in Pennsylvania as we got IPSA delivered to the National Guard. You two are real critical players that helped us to get to success there. Of course, a lot of stuff was about data. A lot of the problems we saw in Release 2 is about data, and then making sure data was flowing amongst systems and processes and all that. Erica, I know you're en route back to the East Coast now. You're in a vehicle somewhere in Illinois. You know, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yes, sir. So, Erica Miller. So before coming on the program, straight AG officer, working really at, you know, all levels, battalion, brigade, a little bit of time in the division, all light infantry. And then I moved over to the program in 2015 and really got to see the development test and obviously the implementation of Release 2 to the Army National Guard with my brother from another mother and my wonder twin Lee, which I could not do it without him. And then after that, I went out to Joint Base Lewis-McChord for about 18 months where I worked there working a lot of COVID mitigation and how do we do PCSs and what happens with that. And believe it or not, data is also a big center of gravity from the personnel world looking at COVID, figuring out numbers of personnel, how do you move them, how do you get their PCS, what happens with leave. All of it's focused really about around data with Vantage. And now I am lucky enough to be coming back to the best coast, the East Coast, and we'll be working in the ASA MNRA's office with the undersecretary. So pretty excited to be moving literally right now live. But yeah, so data is what we saw with test was really our problems with test wasn't so much with the software itself built or how we programmed it. It was really with the data flow, whether it was coming in the system or flowing out of the system. So the data, I'm excited to talk about it because we know that that was sometimes the hardest thing and continues to be some of the hardest things to wrap around and make sure that we have that correct to make sure that we don't have any problems with payer benefits for our soldiers.
Yeah, thanks, Erica. And thanks for joining us in your jump talk as you're moving back to the East Coast. I do have to correct you that the best coast is the West Coast. That's kind of definitive. But anyway, I gotta bring in Joel Gleason here. He's really the linchpin of why we're even talking this issue tonight. You know, Joel is out in the field right now as the garrison commander out in Okinawa. So, you know, kudos to you for having that beautiful spot as a duty location. And kudos to you for interacting with us on the program. Joel, why don't you introduce yourself and talk a little bit about what's piqued your interest about IPSA?
Thank you, sir, and thanks for having me on. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Joel Gleason. I am the Garrison Commander, U.S. Army Garrison Okinawa, and just to pipe into the coast discussion, there's a couple of great places in Okinawa I could hike you to where you can see both coasts of the island at the exact same time. I think among these HR professionals, I'm the interloper here. I'm a logistics officer by trade. At some point in 2003, I think I got to be a battalion S1 for a year. I sat in an O1 Alpha billet as a company commander over some 42 Alpha professionals at another point, and then tracks all the way to here as a garrison commander. I have a directorate of human resources with a military personnel division within it, but being a small garrison, that's a very small element. And so I really am a curious outsider to this discussion. And on top of the fact that the garrison itself has a lot of human resources work, I'm going as my next assignment, I'm headed off to Human Resources Command to be the Ordnance Branch Chief on the enlisted assignments side. So you add that to the fact that Okinawa has some serious traffic and my commute makes me want to listen to podcasts, I became a listener, even though I'm not a HR professional. And I really like the IPSA podcast, was finding some good information. But as I was listening to it, on one of my drives into work, I thought to myself, well, this is great information. And I'm making sure that I'm lining up my HR professionals to listen and to tune into the live training sessions and all the things that are going on. But the question crossed my mind, well, there's a lot of positive stuff coming out and you yourself, sir, are highlighting all the challenges with building the system at the DA level. But what about some of these challenges I've encountered? And, the example I'll throw out there is as a user, as a customer, as we rolled from one system carrying my ORB to another where, mentors had coached and prodded me, hey, you got to make sure every time you get a new assignment, you edit the what's on your ORB to make sure that it's as clear as possible to, those who might be hiring you, to the board, et cetera. Then we shifted briefly to the SRB and I get my SRB and all of a sudden every time I've ever been slotted as excess or inbound or all those other things, popped right back up on the list. And I ended up spending almost an hour with some of my HR professionals getting my new records brief back to, where it had looked before. And I said, well, yeah, if we're after data correctness, how did that happen? And it caused me to send you a good email. And I don't know if it's a horror story, but it was definitely a lot of work to get through. And I'm kind of in the process of those curious questions, sir, I appreciate the fact you're generous enough to bring in a non-expert to see if we can get after some of my curiosity.
Maybe we titled it Data Horror Stories because the length of your email was just, so shocking to me. You were pretty detailed in some of the examples you shared, Joel. So, maybe that's why we hit data horror stories. But, you know, okay, so I think that's a really good segue, though, into maybe talking a little bit about the original SRB that a lot of folks, particularly if you're a major and above or a sergeant first class, you probably remember the IPSA soldier record brief that was posted in the Army in 2014. And really, you know, most people would look at that thing when it was released and was like, oh my gosh, the data is really messed up. So that's probably a good starting point. I do want to pull in Lee and Erica a little bit and talk. You guys remember some of these early kind of circular problems that we were fighting. Maybe you guys talk a little bit about it, and then we'll go from there.
So, sir, I laugh at that because in 2014 as a Brigade S1 at Fort Drum, I remember this was before I got on the program, and all these people came walking into the Brigade S1 shop. They got an email saying, look at your SRB and make sure it's correct for IPSA's coming. And I remember saying, what are you talking about? Because everybody printed out errors and thinking, it'll be fine, it'll get fixed later. And then, you know, less than 1 year later, I'm sitting here on the IPSA program and going through 65 separate data issues and trying to get to the bottom, the root cause of why it was a problem. Was it because, you know, you have data fracticide? Are we using the correct system? Are people inputting the information correctly? You know, a lot of us were making changes in systems but didn't understand what the impact of that change was when that data got sent into another. And it's because a lot of us don't understand where that data is going or how it needs to be input into the system correctly. It doesn't just need to look pretty. It needs to be correct in the right format for all the other systems to subsume it. And that's the same problem we had with the National Guard in release two, is that, you know, we had to grab it from their systems and try to put it into one system while bringing in active and reserve data and then send it back to their systems for them to still use while we are building the rest of IPSA. So there was a lot of trying to take a look at every single one of those data elements and trying to figure out how do you put it, where do you put it, and then who do you send it. Lee, anything else to add with that?
Yeah, I think what I wanted to add is, you know, the SRB kind of introduced this moniker we use on the IPSA program called authoritative data sources. So for some of the first time, folks were actually seeing what ATARS was sending on their schools and not what was hand jammed in EMILPO, or what their height weight said in ATMS, and again, not what was hand jammed in EMILPO. You know, security clearance from JPASS, you know, EMILPO does get a feed from them. So, you know, maybe that wasn't too squirrely. But DEERS, like your benefit IDs and your dependents, right, again, coming from the actual authoritative source. So I think that also threw people for a little bit of a loop, because now you're getting exposed to where we think the data should reside in an authoritative fashion. And now you're actually the customer, the viewer, the soldier is actually seeing that front facing, which a lot of time is hidden from them. They don't have access to an IT system. They don't know what their ATARS record looks like. They don't know other than going to getting an ID card updated, you know, or turning in a birth certificate for a child. They never really understand what's happening at that DEERS rapid station. They don't know what their training folks are inputting them for PT in ATMS, right? So they don't see that stuff. So for the first time, that was kind of was shown to them. And I think that was part of the sticker shock as well. And then I'll just add, since Erica brought up being a Brigade S1 and having to fix people's stuff in EMILPO, when EMILPO, I was there as a Brigade S1 when EMILPO refreshed. So we did a bunch of work, and then they refreshed and we had to start over again. That was unfun. So I remember being a little less than amused when that went down, because I had folks' stuff look pretty good, and then we hit the reset button. That's probably what
happened to Joel's ORB too. The refresh button happened and a lot of stuff got erased, and then it's like, hey, you got to start over. But let me circle back to kind of both of the comments from Erica and Lee. You know, Joel, I think that the biggest problem in the Army, and, you know, again, this is like up here in the enterprise, that there was 200 personnel and pay systems, all different data structures, 650 interfaces. The Guard had 54 systems called SIDPERS. None of this stuff talked to each other. In the active duty, if you're an officer, you were getting updates to your ORB in a system called TOPMIS. You didn't have access to TOPMIS. Your S1 usually did, or your branch manager. But that was only for officers. So we bifurcated the record brief if you were an enlisted person or if you're an officer person. And so if you're enlisted, you were going to eMILPO and updating that. If you're an officer, you're updating TOPMIS. And then those systems didn't interact nicely with each other. So when you're talking about whatever unit you're in eMILPO, it's tied to the UIC. And so the structure of that data was cleaner in eMILPO, but in TOPMIS, it wasn't as linked closely to your UIC. So when the Army started to try and bring those things together, you'd get all these errors. So then people were just focusing on their system. I'm in TOPMIS, I'm an officer, or I'm in eMILPO, I'm an enlisted guy or gal. But it's ungood from an enterprise perspective, right? Because you have different levels of data and information in different systems that aren't talking to each other closely. And then we added in a bunch of other systems data, like ATARS is where your military education is housed. And so if you went to whatever, the career course or a certain training, all that's supposed to be in ATARS, that's supposed to feed cleanly into the HR systems. MODS is your medical readiness, that's supposed to feed into the HR systems. DTMS, the training, localized training records, so your APFT and your weapons qual and some of your certifications. Most of those systems are notoriously clunky, and they aren't used all the time. But when they are used, that data comes in and it's not as clean as it should be. When we turned on that soldier record brief in 2014, what we showed the Army was what the data looked like in all those authoritative systems. So if you're an officer, you were seeing what eMILPO showed for your record brief. And that was a big shock to everybody, because officers were never told that they should make sure that their eMILPO record was updated, because that's really what the authoritative record for the Army is for all enlisted and officers. And so it's one of those things where, you know, culturally we went to the easiest avenue to get your records updated, but it wasn't necessarily the right avenue. And here comes IPSE as we you know, we're going to shut down most of the other HR systems, and now you're going to be in IPSE. You know, we're showing you what that data looks like. And, you know, a lot of people got mad when that thing got rolled out.
Sir, can I ask a question as far as so this may be even be a best practice question, right? As you're talking about, there's an authoritative source, you know, and probably the obvious answer is, you know, having known loss or access listed on my ORB is something that nobody wants. But there's also the point at which, you know, the system automatically generates kind of a code that you can interpret that indicates I was in 1st Brigade, 1st Infantry Division. And if you stare at it long enough, you go, oh, that's what that means. Whereas, you know, I've had mentors who showed me, hey, when you leave that assignment, go into your S1 and get it to, you know, be written into plain English. Or, you know, another example is there's been some schools that come out on the list through ATARS as, you know, whatever the code leads to it being called and you know, the coaching is, hey, go in and make that plain so that when people are trying to hire you, they know where you've been and what you've done. Is that a best practice? Is IPSE going to drive us away from that? Or is that a thing where it's just something where TOPMIS is no longer where we would do that, and that's still a good behavior as far as officers in the Army?
Yeah, you know, I think there's multiple answers to your question, right? There's no simple one, right? We can go down the line. So ATARS doesn't come down right away. That system's going to be around for a little while. But what we've done is we've attacked the data accuracy in ATARS. And really, we've been on a campaign for the last 18 months to clean up codes. You know, for something as simple as ILE, there was something like 200 different codes for ILE. But just because, you know, over time, we didn't manage it as tightly as we needed to. So then stuff was just being added and not curtailed. And just from a long-term data structure perspective, right, that really doesn't make any sense. Especially if you're trying to query something very specific. It wasn't being managed the right way. So that's one example where we've really gone after, okay, clean the codes up so it then displays the information properly. And then let's go after what that data coming into IPSA looks like. If you ask me, that's one of those, we're still going to have some clunkiness as we go live in IPSA, specifically this MIL-ED stuff. As we work through those codes and work through that data coming in. And then, you know, Lee or Erica, you want to talk a little more? Because, I'll start talking hours on data.
Yeah, what I wanted to jump in on was you hit the nail on the head, sir, with data management. So the data management really belongs at the ADS. So first of all, we got to consolidate the codes, right? You get a 3-digit code, it's alphanumeric, and it means, you know, ILE Common Core. Right. And then the second piece of that is to clean up the descriptions like you're talking, Colonel Gleason, about, hey, can we make things in English? So the perfect example that you hit on, Colonel Gleason, was, you know, assignment history. We're notorious, right? Officer Corps, especially notorious for going in and cleaning up assignment history. And why? Because we could do it, and B, it was easy. Right. But in reality, If you follow the trail all the way back to the source, well, that's an MTO TDA document, right? We don't like the way the FM guys write 1st Battalion, 325th Airborne Infantry Regiment, 1st Brigade at, you know, or 2nd Brigade in the 82nd. We don't like the garbly goop they put. So we clean it up to make it look pretty and make it, everybody to understand it. Well, really what we should be asking is, okay, can we clean up the way that moniker is written? Can we clean that up? Because in an IPSA environment specifically tied to organizational structure, we still rely on FM and we rely on a G3 system called the Army Org Server to deliver us that organizational data. And it's still going to come in that kind of format. So consolidation, and then we can work on, hey, how do we clean stuff up so we can kind of manage folks a little bit too? So that's what I just wanted to hit on there too. I don't know if anybody else has comments.
Well, you said consolidation, and then Erica jump in. Joel, I think what IPSA does too is it forces now everybody to use IPSA. So it doesn't matter if you're a warrant officer, enlisted officer, if you're in the National Guard, if you're in the reserves, you are now using IPSA as the center of gravity for HR. Your HR record. So updates, all transactions, all of that will be in IPSA. That alone will clean up a lot of this mess between the three components. Because even right now, we have the National Guard in IPSA, but the reserves are building their ORBs in a separate system. They're not using EMILPA or TOPMIS like we are in the active duty. It's one of the reasons why we can't really query the talent in the Army effectively. It's because there's all these different systems and different data structures and, you know, different information being put in. So just putting this in place will get you there to a certain extent. Erica, you want to jump in?
Yeah. So another thing I was going to say is it's not just, you know, the AOS and your assignment history information and stuff like that. I think the other thing that's surprising with the data is soldiers and even all HR professionals are going to see data they've never been able to really see before. And sometimes that makes new questions. So the example I'm going to use is, like you were talking about, that DEERS information that's coming out. So one of the things that got brought over in release two was that when we got that file from, you know, DEERS, the benefit system, is all of your previous beneficiaries came over. So when those soldiers logged on to the system, they may have seen their ex-spouses along with their current spouse and, you know, ex-children, if they were no longer taking care of those children, and all of those would show up in their, you know, beneficiary information. They weren't listed as a primary. And all of a sudden you got, you know, some upset soldier because their ex-wife from 15 years ago was in the system and they wanted them out of the system, because if they logged on at home and their current spouse saw their ex-spouse in the system, what's that going to mean? And does that mean someone's getting benefits? And the reason I bring this up is the HR professional needs to be able to truly understand what that means so they can help that soldier and say, no, that person received benefits in the past. That information is in this system and we just bring it over as information. And if you don't understand all that, it gets really confusing at the soldier level, because now you have all of this data in one system. So what are you looking at and what is the impact of that data? And I think, Joel, for best practices, you know, the first things you always want to clean up going live is anything that's going to impact pay and benefits. So if your soldiers are in a position where when they PCS in or out, they need to make sure that their dependents are listed correctly. If they're going to receive pay for airborne or demolition, or a language that is, you know, can only get paid if you're sitting in the position, the first important thing is to make sure all of those soldiers are sitting in those positions. Because when we turn this thing on, the biggest thing is just to make sure that, you know, your pay and benefits aren't impacted. And then, as all of us have mentioned, now we can work on making things look pretty by working with the authoritative data source. And I know, you know, some of the people Colonel Johnson has come on has made, found some small things like spelling mistakes of ethnicities that have been wrong in the systems forever, but no one just went after to correct it. And so that's what we've done. As we saw that spelling mistake, I think it was Filipino, if I'm correct. They put the request
Filipino.
They put the request in to spell it correctly. So, you know, we're continuing to make that process better. And as more people see all of the data coming in, we can continue to do that.
So I guess that actually dovetails into something that was in that very long email I sent Colonel Johnson as
horror
stories. This one, I think, counts. So happily married for 18 years. So I don't have the you know, ex-dependent issue. But in 2017, I moved from one duty station in Germany to another, and therefore was entitled to a contiguous overseas tour, you know, flight back to the States, my COT travel entitlement. And so, interestingly enough, when I joined the Army, now I have to own a coast, right? And I was trying to avoid that, sir. I'm from New York originally.
The East Coast.
Well, being from New York originally, I was born there, sir. Sorry. And when I got married, after I joined the Army, my family had all moved out of New York. And when I got married, my wife's family's in Florida. That's absolutely where we intend to retire. You know, followed all the rules in the AFN commercial, talked to legal, et cetera, and changed my home of record to Florida. And
not the East Coast.
Florida is not the East Coast.
I became a Florida man, and I'm proud to be one. But in that process, I went to get this COT entitlement fulfilled, and I show up at the travel office, and they say, "Okay, well, here's the tickets to New York." And I said, "Why would I possibly want to fly to New York? I don't really have a, you know, the folks I'm going to see there, my parents, my wife's parents, everybody's in South Florida. And here's my home of record. It's Cooper City, Florida." And they pull up a document and say, "No, here's your home of record. It's Colton, New York." And that was very interesting to me and intriguing. And I still don't quite understand what went wrong in the system. And I ended up getting, you know, somebody who's smarter than me to fix it. So the next time I got a COT entitlement, which, yeah, I'm milking this overseas tour thing. But the next time I got a COT entitlement, it was, you know, lined up with Fort Lauderdale or Cooper City, Florida. But that's another example of where I really don't even know what happened there as far as the entitlement goes, because I thought I changed it in the authoritative source back in 2002 when I got married.
Yeah, I guess I lost you at Colton, New York, you know, because I'm wondering where that's at.
Sir, if you look at a map of New York and find a space where there's no towns listed, it's somewhere in there, you'll find Colton, New York. It's a North Fort Drum, but not Canada.
Yeah, well, I've done my duty at Fort Drum, so it is beautiful in the summertime.
You must have had that problem before we went to People First Army, Colonel Gleason, because that sounded like people were signed up to take care of you.
I had folks doing good stuff to get me moved in the right direction when the problem was identified. It was just surprising. Yeah. And, sir, if you were at Fort Drum, I'll say if you ever went and enjoyed Star Lake, you were technically in Colton, New York, although at the southern end of the township.
Mm, okay. You've oriented me, so I'm good. I know now. So, Lee, you want to talk a little bit about Home of Record?
Sure. We can go down that road. I mean, ultimately, your Home of Record is going to come ultimately from Milpo. I'm still a little bit puzzled and perplexed how Colonel Gleason ended up in that position. I know I never received a call from as a branch manager from somebody in that situation, but I'd have been happy to try to fix that pretty quickly. But it sounded like some data collision somewhere along the lines of ROTC or what you initially signed up to the Army. So my home of record's still Maryland, right? Although I'd love to change that. I did grow up in Maryland, which is kind of where we're at right now. But because I think there, you know, difference between home of record and where you claim for taxes and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it definitely sounds like ROTC sign up and then an update was made, not made, collided somewhere, in some travel system that someone's trying to get you a plane ticket from doesn't have the right information. So, you know, a feed coming from Emilpo to wherever they're ticketing from. I mean, what could go wrong? Back to the 200, you know, IT systems and the architecture of, and I'll just tell, and not to dovetail off your problem, sir, because that's horrible. But we found that in sustainment and release too, right? Erica can tell these stories as well, where, I mean, it was hard sometimes to walk the lineage back to figure out, okay, where did this actually originate from? And that would take some time to actually pin it down. Okay, the transaction initiated in this system and it went to this other system. And in some cases, you have what I like to call the daisy chain effect. So the daisy chain, right? So a system or a transaction would start, and we saw this in IPSE too, would start in IPSE, go to another system, go to DMDC. Which is, you know, where Deers is at and, you know, DIS and JPass and all that kind of stuff. And that update would come right back and turn around and come back to IPSE. And sometimes would update the wrong stuff, right? So that whole daisy chain of where data is going, and, you know, that's in a situation where there's no errors. So if something errored out, then it just stops. And then trying to figure out where it stopped and why it didn't proceed. So that certainly kind of sounds like what you're talking about. A system was supposed to receive an update and either didn't get it or the update came and it errored and nobody ever went back and updated that little boutique IT system with the right information, right? And then you end up with a plane ticket to New York instead of Florida.
Which is not a bad deal, to be honest. But yeah, clearly not where you wanted to head. I think, you know, for me, it's, you know, I think we're just explaining kind of the chaos in Army IT / HR and individuals' records. But if folks wonder, hey, why are my records kind of messed up or why does my pay sometimes, you know, tweak out? Like for instance, when you deploy, Joel, right, you don't get paid immediately. Usually it takes a month or two to kick in. Well, that's because there's like this air gap between the HR system, you know, hey, you're deployed, and, you know, the pay system. And in a lot of cases, the pay system is pretty old. There's all these workarounds. You actually have to open up a special case to get you the right entitlements if you're, you know, in Baghdad. So that takes a while, and that's why there's a lag and why someone's pay might be impacted or delayed when you deploy. In this case, and, you know, it also ties into why we focused such a heavy emphasis leading up to release 3. So for the big army, right, release 3 will be in December of 21, and that's the reserves, the National Guard, and the active duty in IPSA. We have focused so much on a data correctness campaign where we've asked individual soldiers, and this is hard to message, hey, go pull your record brief out of eMopo, right? There's a link on the HRC site, or you can get to it on the IPSA site. And look at the data that's on that thing. If you notice that home of record is wrong, or your basic active service date is wrong, or your date of rank is wrong, you know, circle that and take it into your S1, and let's get that fixed now, before we import that wrong data, you know, into IPSA, because we're gonna pull like 233 data elements out of eMilpo, and it's gonna land in IPS, and that's what we're gonna start with for the vast majority of your record. There will be some things from TOTMIS for officers that come in, and some other key data from other systems. But that focus right now, if you're active duty, would be looking at eMilpo. And we've asked S1s to really help force that. And, you know, folks are getting after it. But, you know, we also understand there's a whole army that's running fast all over the place. You know, dealing with a bunch of problems. So, Erica, what do you think? And we're going to get to Tony soon. I know he's biting at the bit here, revving to go.
No, I think it's what you said, sir. I think I know, you know, coming out of JBLM and really seeing, you know, First Corps, 25th ID, USERAC, really trying to get after the data correctness and trying to understand, you know, where do we focus on and then how do we keep this going? I think, you know, one of the things that we had in release 2 with the Army National Guard was when the soldiers came in the National Guard and they fixed it once, it was basically fixed. They didn't have this constant churn of a large group of people moving from, you know, one state. I'm in state Illinois, now I'm going to Indiana. They kind of just stayed in the state. So once they were fixed, they were good. Whereas what we have is, you know, as I see Colonel Gleason shaking his head, is that, yep, he constantly has people coming in and off the island, and he's having to deal with, did the last unit make that a priority or not? And I think, you know, as we look at this, I think one of the success stories we have at JBLM was that General George and Colonel Fagnan from, you know, First Corps G1 really forced to have data correctness in training put on training calendars. We had it on the long range training calendar, and they had to brief it during the quarterly training meetings and then the semi-annual training meeting for the divisions. How are you doing for it? We briefed the numbers. They were in the backup slides. And then what are you doing for the training to get ready? Because if you don't put time on the calendar to fix these things and get after it, like you said, sir, there's a lot of other things going on in the Army that will just become overcome by events. Then come December, then it's going to become, you know, critical, but we could have kind of fixed it prior to going into it, and trying to use as much time as we can now, whether it's during in processing, during out processing, trying to get a twofer where, oh, hey, we're doing a PRR. Let's go ahead and do that extended PRR and let's look at those data elements. Is there something wrong in eMilpo? Is there something wrong in DTMS? Is there something wrong, you know, in what other system that we can correct at the same time and kind of look at that data and use it to train our HR professionals on the pay impacting elements as well. And I'm sure that's kind of where, you know, Tony can kind of help us as well with that from the financial side of how we can kind of, you know, use our time as best as we can to get across to the data, make sure it's as good as we can, and obviously work on the pay impact and understanding that as we start to take on more of that functionality.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. Joel, I know you had like seven more things in that horror email. What else you want to throw at us since you're the guest interloper of the day?
Sir, I appreciate that. So I'll do one more that's actually my personal story, just because I think they're anecdotes that I know the best, right? But I think hopefully these are questions that actually apply to others. You know, and I will admit, I think it was implied in what was said that you know, having a mix up in my COT entitlement as I get to live in Germany and get to move to Okinawa, definitely in the first world problem category. So no Gleasons were harmed in the making of this podcast. But as it goes, sir, you know, then the next piece was PCSing here to Okinawa. There were some challenges with regard to the set of orders that were cut for me. And, you know, coming in, we had the orders that were cut when I went to Germany described houses and housing in Germany as incredibly small and, you know, kind of very well worded, you know, you're not going to be able to get your couch around the corner in a stairwell kind of descriptions. And so when I got my orders for Okinawa, I kind of searched through, and my expectation is Japan's going to have smaller housing than even Europe, possibly, or, you know, let's make sure. I read through it, didn't see anything that specifically indicated that. And so since my stuff fit in my small house in Germany, I said, throw it all in the truck and or, you know, on the boat, and we'll get over to Okinawa. And when we got here, I was unpleasantly surprised to discover that, you know, we definitely weren't going to have enough storage for all the stuff. Now, mind you, for the record, I have four kids. They're very involved in a lot of activities. My older three boys are all scouts. You know, now we're all scuba divers. We've got, so we probably max out our shipping household goods with, you know, stuff. But we got here, and at first there was solving, you know, that problem as on the personal level. But really, I looked at it and said, well, wait a minute. I'm the garrison commander. I'm responsible for the orders that people are getting for Okinawa. If it didn't describe it well enough for me, who else is suffering this problem? At the same time, I had, you know, four or five lieutenants submitting exception to policy requests. Hey, I can't live in the BOQ. I brought all this stuff. And so I went to my MPD and said, okay, I don't understand why people's orders aren't describing things a little better. We came up with some great phrasing on it. They put it into the system. And then, you know, my professionals turned to me and said, sir, we just want to make sure you understand this is now out there, so people will get this good description if the local site that cuts their orders downloads it. Talk about right. A data correctness issue. Here I am, the garrison commander, fixing something that, you know, hey, I don't want anyone else to suffer the challenge of not being able to fit their stuff in a house. I want people to arrive, feel like they had a good expected, you know, description of their quarters and be happy with their tour here. And yet we did the work, and the best we can do is make sure that it's also in our sponsorship letters and we send them out ahead of time. It seems like that's probably a data correctness or system issue.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's probably a couple of things going on there. You know, one being there's just not one orders writing system used by the Army for garrison commands and garrison entities. I mean, it's hard to fathom. I mean, if you're listening and you're out there, you're like, well, we're in 2021 and we're in the Army, you know, we're the greatest force, you know, ever. And we don't have a system that helps write orders for our soldiers.
Is mail merge a system? Do you call mail merge a system?
Yeah. But, you know, some of this, you know, so, and then I'm going to bring in Tony to talk, and then, you know, Lee, we could probably talk about release three and what's coming for PCS orders, because I think we're excited because IPSA is going to provide that ability to develop the PCS order for our soldiers. You know, you go back to that 200 personnel system architecture that we started with, you know, that didn't start because people are just jerks, right? You know, people trying to do the wrong thing. That, you know, a lot of cases, it's individual entities trying to do their best in creating functionality for the community. And you know, sometimes for the best gets the most resources as well, right? That's kind of the Pentagon environment for resources. So it's not always put in places that will have lots of impact. We're lucky in IPSA to have senior leader essentially defense on the resource to get this thing done. So we're very lucky to have once upon a time General McConville is the G1, then to the vice, then to the chief, and he said, hey, we're going to get this thing done. And so the investment was put to push this over the goal line and get it out to the Army. Without that kind of support, we probably would have struggled coming out of release two and headed to where we're at with release three. So I say all that just to kind of mention that, that entities were creating things and trying to do their best, and it wasn't synced completely across the spectrum. And so the architecture that we're all dealing with today is a legacy of that 40 years of kind of IT sprawl and a little bit of data mismanagement. And HR modernization is meant to address that, right? Get IPSA out, start to pull down these other systems that you have to deal with, and then continue to upgrade this central system, making sure you have good system performance. Let soldiers get in the system on their iPhones and their personal mobile devices. That's kind of the vision of where we're going. Tony, you want to talk a little bit particularly about PCS? I mean, this is one of the things we're all excited about.
Oh yes, sir, absolutely. I was waiting to bite at the chomp here, because I know this is kind of all where we're going, right? Because I don't want to underplay the fact that there is going to be a that's the hardest part, right? The crossing of the chasm from the legacy environment into the IPSA environment. But I will tell you, where again, my excitement working with HR transformation is we have a pretty good view on what an end-to-end process will look like in IPSA. And to Colonel Gleason, sir, your situation is not uncommon. And I think the theme is, how do we standardize, especially pay impacting or benefit impacting processes associated with PCSs. And this is where in release three, we get to do a lot of this, right? We get to, because we're subsuming several disparate systems that are involved in PCS, the PCS in and out processing end to end, we get at that standardization. And I'll give you, I'll do a quick walkthrough how it'll look in release three. In release three, a member gets placed on assignment. HRC won't do that in another system, right? They'll do that in IPSA, right? They'll match a member to an IPSA job opening. And the way the system is built, as soon as HRC matches the member to that job opening, the system sends an automatic notification to the member. And on top of that, again, based on business rules, there are already predetermined entitlements, right? What a member's, max household good weight is, and everything that's in accordance with the joint travel regulation that's tied to the assignment into that position at that location with that member's dependency record in IPSA. All this is the system calculating the business rules to then send the notification notifying the member you've been placed on assignment. These are your initial entitlements. And then we take that one step further and allow the member to even further refine those entitlements by allowing them to make elections. If they're authorized discretionary elections as part of the assignment, they'll do that in IPSA, right? Triggered off of that notification, the member will then log into IPSA and they see a list of each of the entitlements that are associated with that assignment. They'll make those elections in the system, and then the MPD, this is where, again, the MPD can see that a member has been placed on assignment. They have a draft assignment sitting in their workflow, waiting for them to kind of do the out processing, ensuring that they meet all their, sponsorship requirements as applicable, EFMP requirements as applicable, out processing the installation, things like that. But the good news again is the MPD is all seeing this in one system, right? So just the first front part, what we've done is integrated HRC, the member, and the losing MPD, as well as the gaining MPD, all within IPSAE. It's all entirely visible to all those parties. And then not to mention the leave forms, the member will submit an absence request in IPSAE associated with that PCS. That's all in the system. The member will then be departed by their losing S1 within IPSAE. They'll be arrived by that gaining MPD within IPSAE and then complete their end processing in the installation. But the key thing here is, again, what we're doing is truly integrating the end-to-end from the point a member is placed on assignment all the way through the arrival at the gaining installation, leveraging business rules to standardize orders production and whatnot. And the last thing I forgot to mention was when that MPD approves the assignment in IPSAE, it's the approval that generates the order, right? There's not any hand jamming into mail merge or you know, another, you know, glorified Microsoft Word document. IPSAE will notice MPD has approved the assignment. It reads all the associated entitlements, all the elections the member has made, puts all that into the order, right? It, by the way, reads dependency data coming in from DEERS, includes all that in the order, right? There's no real think work for the MPD. They just have to do the part of screening the member to ensure that they meet all the requirements for overseas tours and things like that. So again, I think looking over the hill here, and as we cross the chasm of, you know, making sure that we get all the data correct, once we're kind of stabilized and everybody understands this paradigm shift and operating in an ERP system, there's a lot of opportunity to standardize. So just want to share that, that there's a lot more to come.
Well, you know, a couple things that you mentioned there, Tony, right, that I want to make sure that we hit home to as we talk about things happening inside the system. So, Sir Colonel Gleason, that means you're aware of that action the whole time, you as the soldier. So that's something that's a little not so transparent today, right? Or you're beholden to the MPD's level of transparency. And I'll be honest, you know, I've been a couple of different places. I'm not cool enough to have been assigned OCONUS like you, sir. But you know, some places do it better than others. It's like you submit your stuff, you get it there, you get positive feedback from the person who's working the order, and it happens fast, and they respond quickly to you and all that. But that's, you know, happening on email and that kind of stuff. Here, the soldier's seeing it in the system. They know that they've got assignment notification. They had to go into the system to make elections, and they could see that all the way through the approval process, right? They know exactly who has it, how long they've had it. And then the orders piece that Tony talked about, not only is it an output of a transaction in an IT system, but then we send it directly to IPERMS immediately. Right. So that's an interface IPSAE to IPERMS. The soldier's going to have it in their record. And then in IPSAE, the soldier's able to view the orders. Right. So in self-service, they go to the little My Orders icon. They click on that and boom, they got their order right there. Right. So none of the email and that kind of stuff kind of cut out that. I do want to touch base on what we started the conversation with, was kind of tied to special instructions and how do we make sure soldiers understand what they need to do to get to their next place, right? So in release 3, that's configurable in the system. But we have to keep two things in mind when it comes to special instructions. And again, I've never been OCONUS. Most of the stuff that's on my PCS order is really not relevant, frankly. You get 3 pages of orders, and there might be a couple paragraphs in there that are relevant. The rest of it is pretty irrelevant. Now, in your example, sir, that's relevant information. We want soldiers to have information like that. So I think, you know, before we talked about consolidation and data standards and all this kind of stuff, as we move into release 3 and we really cut down and ask folks, okay, what is critical to have as special instructions in order, right? What do we need to actually configure to tell folks? And I think that's where, you know, we probably set up a little bit of a governance process that could, to make sure that what we are configuring in the system tied to special instructions that we could do that in a methodical manner, right? And ultimately, you know, there is flexibility in the system, and I hate to be the outside voice here or think outside the box, but, you know, PeopleSoft is configurable. So, you know, as we get down the road, how do we pass that configuration and that control to some of the MPDs, right, at different locations to be able to modify their own special instructions? The exact example that you just gave, sir, you don't have to rely on anything. How is the system? You're controlling the special instructions, just like you said, for your installation. So I think that's something that we needed. I definitely took the note down as you were talking, as we move forward and get this thing out the door and continue to improve.
Yeah. So the capabilities there, where you don't have to, you don't have to rely on a separate MPD, you know, the 70 some odd that are throughout the world, right? You can set it. And then the system understands, hey, if you're coming to this UIC that's at this location, then that's the special instructions that's linked to that. And then you manage it in the system. And I think, you know, this is change at its best, right? So maybe easy for you to manage, right? That change sitting there at Okinawa with your handful of folks, right, that are doing this work for you in your NPD. A little more difficult maybe at Fort Hood, who has lots of folks working, you know, this. And, you know, one of Tony's other jobs, as he introduced himself, is really to work through some of these big changes in organizations. And, you know, on the active duty, the biggest change in process is going to be in MCOM, and it's going to be at HRC. Units, I think, will grasp IPSA fairly easily, that they're going to get it as they get exposed and get into it. In MCOM and HRC, we're really talking about, you know, legacy processes that have been around for a long time that are going to shift and shape and change. And I know we're doing what's called HR summits as we get through the rest of the summer, really addressing some of those changes. Erica, did you want to jump in?
I'll talk about one of the. And I'm thinking this is going to, you know, coming from, you know, the installation and obviously living through COVID and trying to figure out when people were, and it wasn't necessarily based on, you know, the report date, but trying to report early. And obviously depending on when during COVID they were trying to do that based on what the Army was allowing us to do. It wasn't as easy as people thought, because there was no centralized leave forms database that you could look at to see what was approved for that soldier's, you know, final out date and leave date for when they were going to start their PCS leave. So I know, you know, a lot of us were struggling because all that's down at that unit level. And, you know, as Tony was talking about it all being integrated inside of it, now you can really have an idea of who's leaving, how many people are leaving, and how many people are actually going to be coming in based on those leave forms that are going to be in one system with that order. And you can tie all of that together to have a better understanding, whether it's a, you know, you need to surge people to reception to receive the soldiers, or you have a large group that are getting ready to PCS. So you need to talk to the acquisition side of the house to get, you know, enough movers spun up to be able to move with Transcom and working with the AFSBs on post. So I think that, you know, from my standpoint, being on the other side of the coin in this situation with knowing IPSA and then being at the installation level and hearing you guys talk, I think that, you know, there's going to be some really great changes that, for management abilities to really kind of understand the soldiers can see it, but so can all of the leaders. And that's going to allow us to be able to plan better for our soldiers as well.
Yeah, Erica, that's a solid fact, because we have, you know, here in Okinawa, we're not joint properly, but we're very joint in having four services. And, you know, the Air Force manages family housing for the entire island. We have a weekly bed down working group to figure out where all the new arrivals from all four services are going to sleep when they get here, because they got to go straight into 2 weeks of quarantine. That is a government of Japan requirement. Right. And the other part is we're pushing to have as many of those as possible on the Patriot Express, because that simplifies that quarantine requirement. And we don't quite know what our demand signal ought to be as we feed it back to Air Mobility Command. You know, Transcom says, well, how many Patriot Express flights do you need? And when we're working off a guess, and we've got a dartboard that we use for a lot of our data, obviously not. But the I want to throw two questions as I'm hearing about kind of a shift through IPSA and the orders process. Actually, I'll throw three questions. Two are serious.
It's turning into the horror email.
I'll be quick, sir.
All right, keep going.
Guilty. So first one is will that change EFMP in any way at all? Because I'm hearing like the process gets a little simpler, screening becomes a little more automated. That's probably the least automated screening we have going on. The second question, being four services on the island, you know, the Army gets our orders the slowest. What do we think this is going to do with regard to speeding up orders? And then the third one, a lot of folks ask me this, and so I'm just going to ask is, you know, hey, why aren't our pets on our orders? People want to know.
The pet question. Hey, Tony,
I thought we had killed the pet questions, not pets, the pet question many years ago, but we brought it back. You brought it back, Joel.
Erica, answer the pet question since you're so happy for you.
So the pet question is, well, first of all, your pets are not paid for by the government. So we actually, you can go to the site that explains how you, if you want to get your puppers, who are adorable and yes, part of the family, just not a paid part of the family, over to all of the different locations. While they were not on the orders was because they're not, you know, just like the same thing. Let's not put it on the orders because it doesn't impact everybody. And they kind of gotten taken off the orders. So that's kind of where we left it. I don't know, Tony, after I left, if there was any more conversations about the shipping of pets. And I do know, I'm laughing at it, but I do know it became another hot button issue during COVID, Joel. So with, can they be on the Patriot Express? No, they can't. Now I can't fly on the Patriot Express, but I have to fly on the Patriot Express because that's what the COVID order told me to do. And where do I leave my puppers? I get it. But it's
was
also
that was that a Vince Vaughn impersonation? Like, I have to go on the Patriot Express, but I don't need to go, but the order's telling me to go, and I don't have my pet on the order, and how many pets do I get? Does my mom's cat get to come?
What if I thought she was reading off the nice comment I received. I really did.
That's right. These are real problems. These are real problems.
Facebook.
I mean, I'm not even laughing, because if you messed with my two little Havanese, I'd be very upset.
No, and sir, I say it with a little dose of humor, but the truth of the matter is we got, you know, soldiers who are already under some serious stress. And then you add in the fact that they're, you know, sure, it's not a dependent, but a pet is companionship. And as you know, social distancing also means social isolation. So I understand the pet's not in deers, it's not a dependent, and it's not necessarily something the government's going to pay for. But it is a question I get a lot.
Yeah, right.
Yes, sir. And that's really kind of where I was going to, in all seriousness, is it really the more fundamental view is, you know, in accordance with the joint travel regulations, they're just not viewed in that capacity. However, having said that, and you might know this, Colonel Gleason, sir, because when I was working on garrison staff, we used to chair, you know, these town halls, I forget the name of the actual forum, but essentially we asked feedback from soldiers and their dependents on, you know, what things can we as a garrison, for example, present to Army policy writers to include DOD policy writers on travel regulations and things like that. So it's very possible, although now it does not exist in the JTR, that pets are, you know, viewed as an entitlement to be a part of an assignment, for example. That's not to say that it's not possible. I think that would be the route, is to request an exception or an adjustment to the PDTATAC, per diem, travel, transportation, and allowance committee, who writes the JTR. So a lot of that's really the fundamental solution to this, is have the DOD view pets as really, and not necessarily as dependents that you register them in DEERS, but allow them some entitlements to aid in the cost and offset the cost there. So that's my first recommendation on the pets item, because once you do that, back to what I was saying earlier, right? Ipsay business rules are built on JTR policies, and we have the requirement to keep on top of any changes as such. So there's some opportunity there, right, to maybe change that. To your question about EFMP, to the comment I made earlier in what our team HR transformation gets involved in setting the environment is the end-to-end process. Short answer is EFMP is still not done in Ipsay. However, I will tell you that, you know, as we're moving further right along our development, there are, I know sponsorship has been has been kind of a post-release for consideration, obviously subject to resourcing, and then you know, checklist, in and out processing checklist within Ipsay, again, is a post-release for. Unfortunately, it's not within the release 3 baseline, and this is where we're coordinating with folks from the MCOM MPD MCOM G1 team to help manage the expectation that EFMP sponsorship, you know, levy brief, delivery, you know, all those are still, you know, kind of outside of the release 3 baseline, though it's possible in subsequent releases to at least examine if that's if that, you know, could be included as part of the system requirements. To that end, though, I know that the MCOM MPD, in fact, as early as today, I think I might have mentioned it to you while we were waiting earlier. The Colonel Castillo and the Chief of Staff, I think in conjunction with the G357, is, you know, moving forward with the development of the PROMA or P-PROMA tool. I believe that's kind of where the opportunities to automate some of the screening will be, because they talked about kind of this one-stop shop for EFMP sponsorship, schooling, housing, all the core MCOM installation service provider tasks, right? So there is, I would definitely recommend, you know, working through that team to see where, how P-PROMA can maybe automate some of the EFMP screening, because I do recognize it's a very paper intensive process. And then the last piece is, you know, the turn time on orders. Yes, the resounding answer is yes. I mean, literally, as you know, the trigger for the MPD, once a member has completed all of their installation out processing, they've made elections in the system, they've, you know, the MPD has tracked them through each of the out processing stations, and they are good to go in the eyes of the MPD. Literally, as soon as the MPD clicks approve assignment in Ipsay, like Lee was saying, the approval itself will generate the order, send it to the member for their record, send it to the member's IPERMS, and then even notify the commander again that the member is leaving the unit soon as well. So the speed time, I think, by integrating the end-to-end assignments PCS process, we are improving the turn time on the orders. And then we didn't even talk about the turn time on amendments, because it's the same thing. The MPD, all they have to do is, they still have the power as they do today to make some minor adjustments, right? Curtailments, extensions, revocations, etc. The same thing, all those things will be done in the system. And as soon as the MPD approves that amendment, it is near real time to the member, to the member's record, and then full visibility, right? Member sees this, MPD sees this, etc. So I hope that answers your question, sir.
So, Joel, I want to say, so I'm going to just AG nerd out really quick, because I think it's important to say, because I saw it real time. So when Tony's telling you that as soon as it hits approved, it's going to go to IPERMS, and it's, you know, almost instantaneous, it's there. So we were sitting up in Pennsylvania at test, and we were working on promotion orders and then some just funded, just, you know, moving one unit to the other. And we had a speaker from the side of Ipsay, and we had IPERMS in Colorado and HRC on the phone. And they were seen come across there. They were yelling out the names. We got the promotion order for beer. And literally 2 minutes before then, the promotion order had been approved for beer, and they had already had it in, you know, at IPERMS going into the soldier's record. And I was just excited as an HR professional, because here I'm sitting here and, you know, trying to get promotion orders and even PCS orders. I don't even think my PCS orders yet are in my iPerms. I got them right away because the MPD was great at JBLM. They just haven't been scanned into my record yet. So to sit there and hear it actually go through the system in near real time and being able to then have a soldier pull up their record and see it in their iPerms, it really is exciting as an AJART professional to be able to know that those soldiers are going to have that information at their fingertips, because that's what they need. That's what, you know, Household 6 needs to get their transportation set up. That's what I need to cancel my lease. That's what I need to get started. And you kind of feel like, you know, the MPDs are doing absolutely everything they can. They just have a huge load on them. So I don't want to feel like we're hitting them, you know, saying bad things about them, because they're making miracles happen every day. But this is just going to help everybody. And it's pretty exciting as an HR professional to sit there and watch how fast this goes, and to just see it all happen and be able to have it in the system.
Hey, Erica, I'll say that as a soldier and as a garrison commander, it's exciting too. I know you said it's exciting as an HR professional. I got to say it's exciting. I'll throw this one out as my last question, because I think the colonel gave me the light to get off the stage a moment ago.
There's more, Joel.
Okay, I got more questions. You just got to give me the other light. But really, it's a question of, as a garrison commander or as a commander, what can I do to make sure my soldiers are ready? What can I do to make sure that my tenant units and customers are able to get their soldiers ready?
Erica, you want to talk?
I'll go first, and from just being on the same side as you are right now, right? And so I think the biggest thing is that, where is your data correctness and where is your training being put on your calendars to make it happen, and what is the process? So it's not just, yep, we're doing the, you know, the personal record reviews. How are you doing them, and then when are you doing them? The third thing that you need to do internally as a team, and how you do it with its embedded with the training or, you know, right after it, is finding the white space on the calendar to work through how are you going to use the system as a unit and as an installation, right? Who's going to get permissions? Who's going to work through those things? I know that there's HR summits going on. The IPSA program on Mill Suite and everywhere else has all of this information. The National Guard provides it all. But if there is not some thought at the unit level, and it's really getting all of us IPSA people out of the room, right, to talk about how you want to use the system and what, you know, how is the workflow going to work through the system? Basically, you know, kind of like gears, that type of stuff. If you don't put time on the calendar to work through that in a workshop-like environment, and sometimes it's hard, and there is going to be fights, and there's going to be frustrations, and you're not going to like the system. But if you don't put the time on the calendar to kind of work through it and create, you know, your local SOPs, it's going to be harder come 21 December, or, you know, after the holiday when everybody comes back, because people aren't going to know who's supposed to be doing what in your organization. And then it's going to be harder for the trainers to help, because they're not going to know who they're supposed to help. And then that's when the frustration starts coming on, because remember, everybody's going to be new in the system, so there's not a subject matter expert. And then the final thing I'll say is for your subject matter experts, for your trainees, it doesn't have to be the highest ranking in the room or the most experienced person in the room. I'm going to say it has to be a soldier that is, one, willing to change. So they're not going to say, well, in EMILPO, we did it this way. In TOPMIS, we did it this way. This is the way we've always done it. It's someone that's really willing to look at a process and change it, and that they're willing to make changes. And that they have this ability, you know, and it's really the young soldiers that do this, that know how to use technology, right? You don't want to put, you know, we jokingly, lovingly say, you know, the old ladies in the white tennis shoes as your change management expert in an HR system. It's like, you know, I love my dad, but him trying to get an iPhone for the first time and him trying to set it up was hard. So he's calling me, asking me for help. How do I do that? Because he'd never had an iPhone before. And that's kind of what it's going to be like. So you want to make sure that those, you know, change champions and the people that you have as being your SMEs to help train the trainer, they don't necessarily have to be the, like I said, high ranking. They have to be the people that are going to do that the best for your organization. I think sometimes that's hard, because does the O5 want to listen to the E3? They need to listen to that E3, because that's what's going to make you successful.
I do. I want to listen to the E3.
Yeah, I just want to double down on the process, right? So Erica's point about process could not be more salient. When we were describing Colonel Gleason, that a member makes an election and then it goes somewhere and then it goes to the MPD. So that's workflow. That's a process, right? So at the MPD level, you have to understand and work with those tenant units. Hey, how are we going to route this? What process are we going to follow? That process you follow equals a workflow template in IPSAE, right? That you can then attach to that workflow item. And so that's working with the HR professionals across the installation for that specific thing, right? And then internal the MPD, right? When a soldier turns in that RFO with their, you know, life history to get a PCS order, what's happening internal to the MPD, right? Who's it touching? That's probably different sections. How are we going to then set that up? Or how are we going to make that process more efficient and set it up the way we really want to do it in IPSAE, right? So thinking through that does take time and takes a little bit of horsepower that we're all kind of describing. So I just want to hit that home because that's really where the money is made. The IT system is very flexible and you could do a whole lot of stuff. But you have to apply that horsepower to then put it into practical application and then make things go smooth. And that just takes a little bit of exposure and a little bit of time.
So let me put it in some time and space. We are opening up DL training right now. So by the end of May, all of the, you know, if you're an HR professional, the distance learning courses will be posted in the system. But, you know, and how do you go get that? Well, you can go out if you're a soldier and you can download the IPSAE app either off the Apple store or you can go to the TRADOC app store and get your Android app out of there at this point. We're working with Google to get it on the Google Play Store as well. And then you can gain entry into the IPSAE for those courses. Or you can access, you know, via your government computer also. So training is a focus. And, you know, Lee and Erica kind of talked about process and thinking through. This is a change. So if you're an S1, you're now routing actions electronically in the system. If you're a soldier, you're probably doing that off of your mobile phone, off of that app. And you're putting your leave form in, and then that's routed to your S1, and your S1 has to route that to who's going to approve it. So there is a change in how we're just going to interact with our S1s. There'll be some pay transactions that are also automated, and S1s need to understand that. On the data front, you know, we've talked about it a lot. If you go out to our website, the IPSAE website, we have data correctness guides. So if you're an individual and you care about your own personal data, you can go out there, download, hey, there's three areas I want you to look. I want you to look at your DMDC record for benefits and your dependents information. I want you to look at eMILPO, and I want you to think about your training record in ATARS. If you're an S1, I want you to oversee that whole thing. And you can be doing that today, all the way up till December of this year. And I think those are the two main things. Focus on your training, really pay attention, think about it. And then if you're an S1 or an individual, you're focused on data as well. And then what Erica describes is a deliberate, you know, unit approach to thinking through how this changes, you know, lots of stuff. And so that's a more complex task that we really need units to do before we go live. And she's suggesting, based on some very, very deep lessons learned from release 2 in the National Guard, you got to really plan out when you're going to do that. You know, and it's probably after you've done this net training, this DL and other training we have, you know, before December of 21. So all really good points. Joel, those are all just ridiculously good questions that you've thrown at us tonight. And I thought you'd be impressed with how fast Tony just shot all those down, you know, those rapid fire questions. he just got on there. And I mean, he's known as the voice on the Ipsy program.
He was also a former armor officer, and just like a good armor officer, direct fire engagement is kind of, you know, is kind of the way to go. Right, Tony?
Boom, boom.
but yeah, those armor guys are extra excited about it. Hey, sir, from a garrison commander perspective, from a non-HR perspective, this is just all really great information. And the fact that you have a team here that's able to, you know, bring it down to a level that a guy who's just, you know, this is not my expertise, and yet I understood the conversation, you know, and I think not only am I going to be able to take this and use it, but my HR professionals here at the Garrison and hopefully across MCOM, people will be able to pull this out and use it. And maybe even, you know, I'll get a few emails from my fellow MCOM professionals saying, hey, didn't you know this or that? And those are always great. As I go into HRC, having a few points of contact, I'm looking forward to being in the seat of being a branch chief while this is being rolled out. I think there's probably some challenges to it, but you know, hey, I like to show up with work to do at work. So, sir, I appreciate you answering my questions. I'm sorry if my emails turn into horror stories, but I'll try to write you a shorter note the next time.
You know, I just want to say thanks. I want to give a couple of seconds here for our other guests to give a little shout out here at the end. You know, Tony, why don't you give a shout out if you would like.
Yeah, just want to give a shout out to my HR transformation team. Hashtag best of the best. And not even, I don't want to limit it to just them. Everyone on this call who has proudly worn the Ipsy t-shirts on Fridays. It's a tremendous honor working with you guys. And this is just tremendous talent management at its finest. You even get a finance officer excited about HR stuff. That's the litmus test. Good stuff.
That is good stuff, Tony. Thanks, man. Appreciate everything you bring to the team. Lee?
No, just really appreciate the conversation. This is how we get the word out and really kind of change hearts and minds, too. So always appreciate doing this. Look forward to getting this tested and out the door. A lot of hard work ahead of us. We got a great team, and it's really a team of teams. A lot of coordination across multiple entities across the DoD enterprise, especially the Army. So. Just happy to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. And no sleep until we get it done. Erica Miller, my first inductee of the Hall of Fame of Ipsy. Yeah, floor is yours.
Thanks for bringing me out. It's always actually fun to talk about this. You know, I joke and say this is, you know, my first child. I'm excited for it. And you made the last, you know, 2 hours of a drive with my mom driving my car much easier for me. So I appreciate it. And can't wait to see some of you guys in person very soon. And of course, super. Shout out to the JBLM team for, you know, working hard, getting ahead of you know, data correctness and training as well, because they're working hard out there. So I'll give them a shout out as well.
Super A plus for not driving across country and plugging into a podcast, Erica. So uber happy that you were able to get on with us tonight. And Joel, thanks for plugging in. Really appreciate the comments and the interaction. We joked about it, but I think it's stuff that we should be talking about out loud. We're clearly pretty transparent on the program where we're at and what we're trying to do. So appreciate you coming to the forum and participating. And I'm not sure what time it is in Japan, but it's not 8 p.m. like it is here on the East Coast. So just thanks for you plugging in and doing that. For the listeners, hey, we're on every social media outlet that I think is imaginable. If you go on YouTube, type in IPPS-A and you will find a world of cool training and videos of functionality on the program. Our website's pretty good. If you're in the Army and you want to check out S1Net, all kinds of good stuff is on there as well. Please continue to plug into us as we work through 2021 and get this cool system out to the Army in December. So thanks for plugging in, and good night.
Right soldier, right job, right on time.
24/7, 365.